Still not sure if this thing works. Not used to standing.
A little confusing.
So as Rabbi Bieler mentioned in his warm words of introduction, we came up with these topics, everybody in our Torah knows, months before. But you could always count on some tzaris when it comes to conversion. It was a safe bet. The who is a Jew issue has been going on now for as long as the state of Israel has been going on. And in fact, as we all know, in the last year it became even more of a problem than we have until now. There always was the issue, to what extent would the Rabbanut accept conservative conversions, reform conversions? In the past year, the question was raised, to what extent will they accept Orthodox conversions? It's very interesting that you go to small towns throughout the United States, etc., you have a rabbi there, he would never consider doing a get on his own. Right, if you're a person, Nebuch has a family that's getting divorced, you'll bring in someone from the outside to do a get. Everybody knows that the halachos of get are very complex. And the potential, if something goes wrong, that they still be remarried in the mamzerus, etc., is a very serious concern. So rabbis in general, unless they are expert in the area, do not touch gittin. For some reason, that hasn't been the approach to geirus. Geirus also can be very complex. Geirus as well has some very significant downsides if you get it wrong, but for some reason it has been accepted that just about every Rav is comfortable doing it, and the Rabbanut is not as comfortable with just about every Rav doing it. Therefore, there is much discussion. There is a committee here from the CRC, a Geirus committee that works with Midwestern communities. The RCA on the East Coast is working with communities to somehow put Geirus in a organized manner that wherever a person goes, if they want to be Megayer, they know that it's being done in a proper way. And if anybody wants to marry into a Geir family, etc., you can remain comfortable in knowing that that person is okay. Halachically. We will note. So I just wanted to discuss a little bit, just a basic overview of what does it take to do a Geirus. The Gemara in Krisus tells us that when it comes to Geirus, when the way we do Geirus nowadays is patterned after the original Geirus. What was the original Geirus? Who were the first Geirim?
Har Sinai.
Up until Har Sinai, none of us were Jewish. And then God did a major conversion. Everybody together did one big conversion. Everyone became Jewish. It's an interesting discussion, not for now. So that means that Avram wasn't Jewish. Yitzhak, Yaakov, the others, they're all a bunch of goyim. Shh. Don't let anyone find out that I came for them, because that'll go to shidduch. But what does that mean? What? So there's a fair amount of discussion beyond this forum that could be discussed, but the general assumption is the answer is no. No one was Jewish until Har Sinai. At that point, God did a massive conversion, and that massive conversion created Klal Yisrael. What was involved in that Geirus? So the basic steps towards Geirus, the Gemara tells us, is Mila, circumcision, applies to men only, obviously. Tvila, immersion in the mikveh. And Karbon, you have to bring a sacrifice. The Gemara, already in the time of the Gemara, realized that we have a problem here. Right? The Karbon part gets kind of tricky when you don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So that should perhaps mean that that's the end of Geirus, which would make for a very short shiur, which, if that was the case, I would encourage Rabbi Bieler to speak a little bit more about what's going on and why you're right now. But luckily for me, right, that is not the case. The Pasuk in Bamidbar tells us, Ki yagoritcha ger l'doroseichem. In discussing an unrelated halacha, it says, was there should ever be a ger, a convert, l'doroseichem, during the later generations. So the Gemara takes that to mean that there has to be a possibility for Geirus in every generation. Meaning that the korban, the sacrifice that has to be brought, is not ma'akev. If you can't bring it, that's okay. Rather, a ger was supposed to take a certain amount of money, the money would cost to buy this korban, and put it aside, she'ibana beis hamikdash, from the beis hamikdash would be rebuilt. They will take that money at that point and bring the korban. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, at the time of after when he was in Yavne after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, had the realization that the Beis HaMikdash is not going to be rebuilt anytime soon. Therefore, he stopped that practice. He said, people should not put the money aside. What's the reason for it? Because you're going to put the money aside and you're not going to be able to buy a carbon. It's going to sit there. Someone accidentally is going to go out and buy a pizza with it. They'll do something that's not buying a carbon. That would be me'ila. That would be a desecration of the money. That would be perhaps chayv misa b'day shemayim. That is bad. Therefore, they stopped doing that. So we don't do that anymore. There's no carbon anymore, and we don't even put money aside for it. When Mashiach should come speedily, at that point, the people who are gerim will have to bring karbanos. And whatever other karbanos are owed for yoledes, whatever else, the person might, some shogegs, I'm sure we have here, maybe a chatas here or there, whatever you have to bring, we'll worry about it then. But as it stands right now, we do not put the money aside for it. So therefore, basically what it comes down to is you have two major steps towards geiris. And for women, one step. For men, it's mila and tvila. And for women, it's just tvila. That seems to be missing, most people point out, the main part of Geiris. The main part of Geiris, like the main part of Har Sinai was, Nasa v'Nishma. There has to be what's called Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. People have to want to be Jewish, and they have to be willing to accept upon themselves the mitzvahs. If they don't accept upon themselves the mitzvahs, there's really nothing to talk about. The original Who is a Jew controversies were based on that. So, for example, the most well-known example is marriage. Very contemporary. Unfortunately, it's always contemporary. Right? Boy comes home, brings home a nice girl. The mother who has not shown this boy any religion her whole life, said, oh, if you marry a shiksa, I'm going to stick my head in the oven and kill myself. Right? Suddenly she turns to religion, so they say, okay, good, she'll convert. And with that, you know, she does a few laps, and the rabbi blesses her, and she's now Jewish. Was there any Kabbalah Samitzvah? Is there any assumption she's going to keep Shabbos? She probably doesn't even know what it is. You know, he says, listen, honey, it'll make my mother very happy. It's not very painful. You're a woman. You just go in, you jump in, you're out, it's done. She says, fine. That's it. So are those people really Jewish or not? So the answer is there's no Kabbalah Samitzvah. The general assumption is there's no Geiris. There were a lot of other cases which were more exciting. For example, the Israeli Basketball League for years had a rule that there was a limit to how many non-foreigners could be on your team. Right? I think it was two a team they were allowed on. So let's say I already had two foreigners, but some guy just got dropped from the NBA who would be very helpful for Hapoel Tel Aviv. So what do we do? So there was a well-known rabbi actually in Milwaukee, right around here, who would convert these people. He'd bring in this guy. He specialized in tall African Americans, and he would quickly convert them, and with that they would claim the law of return. They become an Olech Hadash, they go Nefesh B'Nefesh, whatever happened at that point, they fly off, and all of a sudden they're Israelis, and now they can play basketball. Does anyone really think these people are Jewish? There was a Kabbalah HaMitzvahs here? Obviously not. So the first thing you need is a Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. If you don't have a Kabbalah HaMitzvahs, that's the end of it. In fact, there's two Kabbalah HaMitzvahs, actually. There's one is the general, that to get going, you need to have this Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. Further, when the ger is in the mikvah, they go over what's called mixos kalos v'chamuros. We learned this out of Rus. Rus, the preeminent ger, geris, when her husband dies, so Naomi tries to dissuade her. Said, oh, what do you need this for? This isn't very helpful for you. When I had sons and they were rich, and then it was good. And now it's not worth it. Go home. So Orpah takes her up on the offer, and Ruth doesn't. The Gemara darshins that the discussion was based on this, right? The Kasher Elech Shalvin Talin, whatever she said was a discussion of certain mitzvahs that the person that Naomi was telling her that you have to do this, you have to do that, and she said, no, I will accept it all. So that is a second form. Obviously, that's not as important as the main one, that the people have to actually accept on themselves the mitzvahs themselves. There are issues out there. So, for example, there's no ger out there who probably can name the 613 mitzvahs, much as there's probably not too many people in the room that can name the 613 mitzvahs here. Right? I'm sure there are a lot of mitzvahs that people never heard of. The 39 malachas, right? So tell me, if you're Jewish, are you going to be osa shtei batei nirin? Will you ever make two heddles on Shabbos? I don't know how people here know. You probably know what a heddle is.
My wife does it.
Right, at least your wife does it. By the way, Bryce's wife owns a loom. And they're trying to sell it?
She did sell it.
She did sell it. Baruch Hashem. Right? So what does Kabbalah HaMitzvos mean? Do you have to know them all? So it's much like Nasa V'Nishma. Right? What was Nasa V'Nishma? We don't know what the mitzvahs are, but whatever they are, we're willing to accept them. So too, again, has to have that acceptance. So whatever the mitzvahs are, we'll accept them. Now, does that mean they'll never do an Aveira? Of course, we all do Aveiras. That's inevitable, right? If you have a Yetzer Hara, you can't be a Ger. No, everybody's going to do Aveiras, but there has to be an acceptance of what these mitzvahs are. It's a big discussion nowadays in these committee meetings as to what to expect. For example, Taras Mishpacha. That obviously is a very important part of our religion, that family purity laws. So certain, in one of these meetings, a well-known New York area rabbi got up and said, we can't demand that. I said, why can't you demand that? It's a chi of kares. It's very important. Again, then he said, because most of my shul doesn't keep it. So the question is, well, what are we aiming for? We want it to be one of the Baal Batim in your shul? That's the ultimate. Right? Obviously, there's some discussion what should be expected or not. Okay? For example, we would want them to say, you know, we understand you shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. There is a possibility that they might speak Lashon Hara, but an understanding that at least this is something that we're aiming for. That's the Kabbalah HaMitzvos, and that's obviously an important, if not the most important part of it. Not to belittle the other parts. Next is you need a Beis Din. There needs to be three people that are kosher to be Dayanim at the Geiros. Why do we do that? What's the necessity for it? So the Yeshua Yaakov has a very famous piece. There's something called Elokim Nitzah Ba'adas Kel. That whenever a Beis Din gets together to try a case, the Shechina comes down to partake in it, to help them along. So just like at Maimed Har Sinai, there was the Shechina, God was present, so too, we have as well a opportunity to bring down the Shechina to be there as well. Also a very difficult issue. When you deal with non-religious conversions, you don't always have a situation where the three Dayanim are good Dayanim. They could be related to one another, which would be a problem. They could be Machal Shabbos Befarhesia, which would make them puzzle. These are all issues that come up. That is why that these are problems. Getting back to the basics, though. Okay, the Mila and the Tefillah. So there is a very interesting question. So there's a specific order that is supposed to be done. First, the person is supposed to have Mila. Then they go to the Mikvah. And then they are in fact Jewish. Mila and then Tefillah. What if you did it the other way around? So why would you want to do it the other way around? So I remember when I was a Talmud in Yeshiva, back in the day, there was a strange case that came up. What happened was, there was a tribe of people in the Amazon who claimed that they were one of the lost tribes. And therefore, they wanted to come to Israel on the law of return. So they called up the Jewish agency. There was over 100 people. They said, listen, you know, we are the Shevet of I don't know what, and we are in fact interested in coming back to Israel. Come pick us up. We're packing our bags. So the Jewish agency wasn't exactly convinced. They said, listen, we're not convinced you're Jewish. You know, you're going to need a conversion. So they said, fine, bring us over, we'll convert. So the Jewish agency said, no, you convert, we'll bring you over. So, okay, but how are you going to convert in the jungles of the Amazon? So they sent down a team of three rabbis. One was from Israel, two were from America. And they came back, and they interviewed each and every individual to see if they were, in fact, knowledgeable of what Judaism is. And in fact, if they were really converting for the right reasons. And of the group, it came, I think, 89 of them, they accepted as Geirim. So now it was necessary to do a Geiris. The problem was as follows. The mikveh they were using was the local watering hole. And the local watering hole was infested with a cholera epidemic. So therefore, it probably was not the best idea to have people with open wounds go jump into the watering hole. So the question was, what do you do? So one possibility was, well, you do it, you wait for 2 weeks, and then you finish it up. None of the rabbis were interested in spending another 2 weeks in the Amazon. That was just not one of the, that was not a workable option. So the question was, b'di'evad, right? Given the strange case we have here, can they first maybe go to the mikveh, and then afterwards do the milah? Therefore, they'll jump in without any open wounds, and then they'll be good to go. So I remember it had to be the late 80s, and the phone rang in the payphone outside the third floor base medrash. Those familiar? That used to be the source of all great information. And it was Josh Hoffman, who was in Peru at the time, called. He wanted to speak to Rabbi Simon. He said, there's a tshuva for Moshe about this. I don't have it with me. Can you look it up? So, in fact, Rav Moshe quotes the Ramban that b'di'evad it's okay. And a fascinating piece of logic. This is very important. What's the reason? The Gemara discusses the case of Me'uberish and Nesgaira. What if a pregnant woman converts? What's the status of the child that's born? So the Gemara says we all know that child is Jewish, but we're not sure why. It depends on the machogis. Do we say uber yerech imo or uber lav yerech imo? Translated, do we assume that the fetus is a limb of the mother, or do we assume that the fetus is something that's separate and distinct from the mother? If we assume that uber yerech imo, that the fetus is a limb of the mother, so think about it. When a woman jumps into the mikveh, so her hands get wet, her feet get wet, belly gets wet. Her kidneys don't get wet. Her pancreas doesn't get wet. Is her pancreas Jewish? Are her kidneys Jewish? Obviously, it's the whole body. Every limb of the body, whether it touched the water or not, becomes Jewish. So if I assume that this embryo is, this fetus, is a limb of the mother, so it becomes Jewish like the rest of the mother. That's one possibility. The second possibility is saying, no, it's not a limb of the mother. However, in order for something to be a problem that it doesn't get wet, it has to be that it's not part of the body. For example, you have cases like this. A woman has brain surgery and they put a metal plate in her head. Now she has to go to the mikveh. Does she have to take it out to go to the mikveh? Obviously not. She'll die. Death is bad. We don't support it. Right? So therefore, we say that since that is part of what keeps her alive, that's not a problem. She can go into the mikveh like that. So too, this embryo, this fetus, has a life support system, and that life support system is the mother. So therefore, when the mother goes into the mikveh, it's as if the child went into the mikveh also, and nothing was in between the child and the water. So one way or another, this child is Jewish. However, it's just a question of why. Now, is there any difference why? Well, there's an awful lot of differences why. According to the first opinion, that child was born Jewish. According to the second opinion, that child is a convert who has begun the conversion process. Right? Meaning if that's a boy, that person's going to have a bris as a convert, or else the child won't be Jewish. As opposed to the other case, if you tell me that the child was part of the mother, whether that child has a bris or not, that child is Jewish. And if you think about it, does the bris have to be on the eighth day? If it's a Jewish child that's born, of course it has to be the eighth day. If it's a convert, it could be on the first day, the second day, the 85th day. It's obviously not Tocha Shabbos. So that's one difference. Is there a relationship between the mother and the child? If it's born Jewish, of course. If the child's a convert, it's not related to anybody like any other convert. So going back to our case, if you assume, like the second way, and the Gemara at least raises the possibility, what happens when this child becomes a convert? How? First it goes to the mikveh, and then it has a bris. What do you see from there? That there is a possibility where it can be done out of order. Now that Gemara, which was always an interesting, important Gemara, over the last few years becomes much more interesting. How so? Because you have the issue now of, for example, a surrogate mother. An Ein Pundakit, as they say in Hebrew. What's the case? Let's say a Jewish woman has an issue, she can't have children. Her eggs are not good. But her uterus is fine. So what happens? She'll get donor eggs. A woman will donate eggs. They will fertilize it with the husband's sperm. They will make embryos. They will put it into the woman's uterus. She'll give birth 9 months later. Or vice versa. A woman has fine eggs, but she has a uterine issue. Therefore, they take the woman's eggs together with her husband's eggs. They make embryos. They put it into another woman to carry. One woman is Jewish, one woman's not Jewish. What's the status of the child? So what do we care about? Do we care about the biological mother? Who does this child share their DNA with? Or do we care about the birth mother? So think about it. If you can word the question this way, is there any possibility that a Jewish mother gives birth to a non-Jewish child? Maybe yes, maybe no. What?
If the egg is coming from a surrogate mother.
So if you're going to tell me that they are donor eggs, right? Then there's such a possibility. Can we imagine that halachically? Or do we have to say no? It's the birth mother. You know, wherever the child comes out of, that's it. So that goes back to this Gemara. Right, so this is the case the Gemara has, where you have a child who was conceived by a non-Jewish woman and carried and given birth to by a Jewish woman. It happens to be the same woman, but in the beginning she was, and that's this question here. That child, when it's born, is it Jewish because it had a Jewish mother, or is it a potential convert because it was conceived by a non-Jewish mother? These are common questions. There are less common questions that come up also. I was speaking to Michael Broyd at one point. So he told me he has this running machlokas with Rabbi Bleich. So legally, there's a very big issue with surrogate mothers, right? If everyone remembers the Baby M case, very big case. A couple hired a woman to carry a baby for them. Biologically, it was theirs. The woman gave birth and she refused to give it up. The courts just didn't know what to do. She signed a contract, but so what? It's illegal to sign a contract to sell your children. That goes out if that's what's going on here. Right? So at this point, I don't know what happens in Illinois, but in New York, to the extent possible, they try to avoid it. Unless they're guaranteed somehow that it's a family member, that there's not going to be a fight, if there's doctors just won't do it. So it seems that certain scientists have this idea. Instead of using a surrogate mother, getting another woman, why not use a surrogate cow? Take a cow, a female cow, hormonally manipulate the cow that will be able to sustain a child for 9 months, do a cesarean, and that's that. The cow will never give you a hard time. So there you have the question. So you take a Jewish embryo and you put it in a cow, what's the status? Is it Jewish? Or is it fleshics? Right? That's what it comes down to. So this question, this cash of Ober Yerech Imo, Ober Lav Yerech Imo, ends up being a very, very important discussion, not just for the question of the rare case where you have to, where you do your mealing and tefillah in opposite orders, right? Which happens from time to time. But this is also important for the far more complex, probably far more important cases that are happening literally every day at this point. Another ramification of this has to do with another question. So there's such a concept as ger katan. Even though we require kabbalas ha-mitzvahs, it's necessary that the ger accept upon themselves the mitzvahs, and usually somebody under the age of bar or bas mitzvah does not have the mental wherewithal to have a true kabbalah, we do allow parents to convert a child under the age, based on the concept of zachen l'adam shelo b'fanav, meaning that since we assume that ultimately this is what the child would want, therefore we allow this conversion to happen. Now, if that child turns 12, 13 years old and says, this isn't what I wanted, they're out of it. They're out of it that they were never Jewish. So we call hidil yaholimchos. When they get older, they can back out of it if they want. So among the discussions that we have to discuss here is this child, where the mother converted, when they reach the age of majority, can they back out? If you assume that Uber Yerach Imo, that this child became Jewish because the mother was Jewish, we're sorry. Whether you like it or not, you're in it. If this child is actually a type of convert which started the conversion process in utero, then at the age of 13, they would have the opportunity to back out. The Avnei Meruah makes that point. On the topic of Ger Katan, so whenever the general rule about all brachas is all brachas are made what we call over lasi asan. Before you do a mitzvah, you make a bracha. The most notable exception to the rule is by a ger. A ger does not make a bracha until after the ger is processed. What's the reason for that? So it would seem obvious because beforehand, not Jewish. Right? There's no possibility to make the bracha beforehand because the person's not Jewish. Therefore, when that person becomes Jewish, they make the bracha. They couldn't do it beforehand. What about a situation, also very common, a couple adopts a baby, non-Jewish baby. They decide they want to convert the baby. The baby is at this point 3 months old. Who's going to make the bracha? So there are three opinions. The simplest opinion is the opinion of the Ravid, which says, let the Beis Din make the bracha, and let them do it beforehand. Because the Beis Din, more than presumably, is Jewish. They don't have this issue that they have to wait till afterwards. So they should do it beforehand. Rav Soloveitchik disagreed. Rav Soloveitchik thought that, no, the bracha on Geirus is not really because the person's not Jewish. But rather, this isn't a bracha that I'm about to do a mitzvah. It's a bracha that it's brachas hashevach, I'm praising the fact that now I am Jewish. So this is the type of bracha that was made specifically for afterwards. So even the case where the ger happens to be Jewish, you still would make the bracha afterwards. There's a third opinion, which I think is the majority opinion, is who says you have to make a bracha? Let nobody make a bracha. So I remember the first Geiris I was on. The senior rabbi there was an old Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik. So I said to him, so what are we going to do about the bracha? He said, like Rav Soloveitchik, we'll make it afterwards. I said, fine. When you make the bracha, have me in mind. I'll say amen. Figuring that I was pretty safe no matter what that way. Didn't have to put myself. Go. You go right ahead. Don't let me stop you. Yes?
The subject of the adopted non-Jewish child, would not the child get at risk at whatever point and then go to mikvah before he's from mitzvah?
No. The child's going to both get a bris and go to the mikvah right away.
Right away?
Right away. At the point when that child turns 12 or 13, they have the option of opting out. If they don't opt out right away, they're out of it. If they do opt out, that will indicate that they never wanted it and therefore they were never Jewish. Meaning that any wine that kid poured was Yayin Nesach. Literally. I mean, you got problems if they should opt out. So, but the entire conversion process is done early on.
But they have to opt out at Bar Mitzvah time.
Right. At that point. I mean, we get one shot.
But is there also issues of Bechor as well?
How do you get the issue of Bechor?
Well,
help me out here.
Jewish.
So Bechor only matters for fathers. And either way, this child is not related to the father. So it ends up not being an issue. There are many other issues, but it happens to not be one of them. Yes? So Pidgin Habain, would there be? I think either way also not.
Thank you.
What?
How could there be?
How could there be? It's the woman's first child. It's Peter Echem.
She's not Jewish.
She is Jewish. She converted. It's Muberish and Esgaira. By the time the child it's a question who would do it because the child's not related to the father. Yes? Young lady in the back.
In the case where the mother is Jewish, the father is Jewish.
Right. If the child would be chayiv to the pigeon, either someone could do it for it, or the child would do it itself. It's interesting. In yeshiva, every 2-3 years we do a massive pigeon abein. We go around, and yeshiva has many bali tshuva, etc., who were unaware that there was such a thing, and therefore we do a pigeon habein. We make a suda, and we collect everybody who has to do it, and we bring out some of the kohanim. And I remember the first time we did this, it was very interesting. The kohen was Rabbi Konigsberg, who is one of the new Rosh Yeshiva. He's around 5'7". I might be being a little bit generous here. And the Rachanimo, the little boy, was 6'4". So at the end of a pigeon habein, usually the Kohen leans over the baby and does Birchas Kohanim. Poor Rabbi Kohensberg was standing on his tippy toes trying to reach, which wasn't as big as probably carrying the guy out on that silver tray. That's what we have the wrestling team for. But it's not uncommon. There are many cases out there where people do the pigeon habein later. Going back to Mila a little bit, the other issue that comes up with Mila, which is a relevant issue, is hemophiliacs. It's not as much of an issue now that we have clotting factors, but among the Achronim there's a lot of discussion, what if a hemophiliac wants to convert, what do you do about it? So there's basically three opinions. Some people say, he can't do it, therefore, it's like the carbon. If he can't do it, it's not ma'akev. Right? The Gemara talks about a eunuch. If a eunuch wants to convert, they don't have to do a bris. So the question is, he can do it, but it'll be dangerous. So some people say that's the equivalent of can't do it. Other people say, no, it's a bad situation, but they can't become Jewish. So answer number two. And answer number three is, if you really want to be Jewish, so roll the dice. Little Mesiris Nefesh, let's see what happens. Nowadays that doesn't come up anymore. We have clotting factors. I don't know how often it came up in the olden days either, but that's not on the table. Tefillah has a lot of its own issues. Most notable, most obvious, is what do you do with a female convert? The Beis Din are men. Going to the mikveh necessarily involves a significant tznius issue. What do you do about that? So Yisrael Salant had this idea that the Beis Din could stand outside and hear the splash. It does not sound that way from the Shulchan Aruch. Moshe Feinstein was very opposed to that. Moshe thought that, what do you mean, hear the splash? It could be she stood there, she threw in a basketball, and Mazel Tov and go home. There are generally two approaches with that different but they didn't take. Some but they did, what they do is they put a sheet over the mikveh. She goes in, there's a hole in the sheet, they see her head, and they talk to her, she dunks in under the sheet, and that's it. Another option is that she goes into the mikveh with her back to the dayanim, wearing a loose-fitting robe. They do the Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. She dunks in, they walk out, they slam the door, and she comes back up again. I think that's what's commonly done in most cases.
Is this an issue
that's
for the Hetzer?
Because
why couldn't you have a woman?
You need a Beis Din there for the Shechina.
Couldn't you even start that with the Yisrael Salanter's approach, though? In other words, they hear what's going on, but there's no one to contest about it.
So Rabbi Shechter just came out with a new Sefer. I guess that was in the last update. So in Rabbi Shechter's Sefer, he has this piece where he thinks that a Ger can't be a dying for Geris. Very interesting piece, that there are rules that in general a ger can't be a dayan. There's a drasha about this. Among the people that can't be, among the list is a ger. Does it apply for this also? He thinks yes. It's very interesting because there is a practical case going along where of a ger, of an Orthodox background, who has made 15 geruses as of late. Now, as they were looking through the various geruses, this came up. So the question is, how serious? Rabbi Shechter is very serious. He thinks that those people aren't actually Jewish. And they're running around trying to find these people to do it over again. Because this idea of bringing down the Shekhinah is ma'akev, even b'dieved. Rabbi Bleich agreed with him. There are other people who disagree. Rabbi Sendrov explained a tshuva against it. But that is a real issue. The Beis Din is a very important part, according to that approach. So we're already running late here. We'll just wrap up. Can we go a few minutes over? It was his fault. If he wants to work out, they can.
Next week,
okay. Me neither. We'll just briefly go over some of the peripheral ideas that come up. So, for example, some of the interesting shahs. Rav Avadia Yosef has a question regarding if someone's Megayer, does that make them Ashkenazi or Sephardi? Right? Well, do you have to wait 3 hours? You wait 6 hours? What do you do? So Rav Avadia says, do I even have to finish the sentence? He thinks, of course, you're supposed to do it the right way. You're supposed to be Sephardi. Other people don't, Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't see it that way. That's one approach. Other interesting questions that come up. What does a goy do about Shalom HaSani Goy? Right? Every morning we say Shalom HaSani Goy, you know. Does he get another Shalom HaSani Kirtzono for that? And how do you deal with the Shalom HaSani Goy? Even more basic, Elokeinu ve'Elokei Avoseinu. Right? Okay, not really. What? Okay, I don't want to insult anybody here, but right. So whatever it is, this guy was definitely in the Nachwi. That was a bigger problem. So you know, these are all interesting. I'll just among the very interesting shilas that are out there is the issue of Bishul Akam. So as I'm sure people are aware, if you have food that's 100% kosher, right? Kosher ingredients, etc. But it was cooked by a non-Jew alone, you're not allowed to eat it. That's called Bishul Akum. What's the reason for that? So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us, it's a concern, we don't want mingling. Right? Too much mingling with non-Jews and you end up with a New York Times article. You don't want to get involved in that. That's the bottom line. So, because of that, you know, there's certain delineations we make, etc. The question is as follows. Let's say someone's being Megayer, and in the morning for breakfast he has scrambled eggs. Okay, takes the scrambled eggs, he puts them in the fridge, he goes, he's Megayer now, he comes home, he wants to finish the rest of it. So what's the story? Can he eat those scrambled eggs? It was cooked by a non-Jew. But then again, what's the concern? He's going to go marry himself yesterday. You think about it, right? The logic is really stretched when it comes down to that. Right, how about Tefilas Kelim? Anything that was, any utensils, right? We know when you buy new glasses, new silverware, right? if you buy it not from Israel, if it was made or owned by a non-Jew, he has to take it to the mikveh, right? When this guy goes to the mikveh and he's Megayer himself, does he now have to throw all his pots and pans because yesterday they were owned by a non-Jew, which happened to be him? So it's very interesting. The Shem Yishmuel, the Sochachov Rebbe, the son of the Avnei Nezer, has a tshuva in Parshas Matos, where he says no, because when the ger goes to the mikvah, not only does he convert, but everything he owns converts with him. So I said, Chassidus Shavuot, very cute, very nice. But l'maisa, a lot of people quote a lehalacha, Rav Avadia Yosef has a lehalacha, etc. That in that situation, the person does not have to be tovel their kalim, because it counts for everything when you jump in. Conversion's a big deal. It's happening all the time. In many, many cases, it's is of wonderful people, as we know. And the Vahaftimus HaGer is a mitzvah d'oraisa. Obviously, we reach out to Gerim and we welcome them with open arms. We don't proselyze. We're not recruiting. But if someone on their own wants to come in, we could not be happier about it. But on the other hand, you have to be very careful to do it in the right way to avoid any issues down the line. Thank you.